soldiers, sex, and national security. Why has using dating apps become a dangerous move for military personnel?
Follow the money.
This is the podcast of the European Investigative Newsroom, Follow the Money. I'm your host, Emma de Chatinier, and as always, I'm joined by Follow the Money reporter and my co-host, Alexander Fanta in Vienna. Hi, Alex.
Good morning.
Dating apps like Tinder promise connection, romance, and privacy. But what if a simple swipe could reveal far more than users realize? Follow the Money uncovered how the location data shared by Tinder can be used to track the movements of military personnel across Europe, including near sensitive bases and deployments. By creating fake profiles and exploiting how the app displays distance, it was possible to follow soldiers almost in real time without ever even matching with them. But that raises serious concerns about threats to national security from countries from Germany to the US, especially as malicious actors are known to use dating apps to catch valuable targets and obtain confidential information. Today, we're joined by Follow the Money reporters Dimitri Tokmetsis, joining us from Amsterdam, and Sebastian Brommersma, joining us from Scotland. Welcome, Dimitri and Sebastian. Thank you for joining us here.
Hi, Anna.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, and to jump into this conversation, how did you guys first get the idea of looking into Tinder?
Dimitri and I published a story together with Martijn Reuvers. And Martijn was actually a Tinder user. So he was looking for love, like so many other people on this planet. Martijn is also a bit of a tech geek. So he decided to just see what type of information about him is actually being sent to the servers of Tinder. And then he discovered that there's a whole bunch of information in there that he wasn't aware of that was being sent out, and quickly realized that this could be something that could be quite, well, dangerous for the users of Tinder. And that's where we come in. So he reached out to us and we decided to dig a little bit deeper and to see if we could find like a national security angle to this story. Because obviously, if you can track anyone, you can also track military personnel, for instance. And so we did.
So did this come out of a place of where you had already a very, very clear idea what kind of a story we're doing? Or were you just messing around at the beginning?
I think we had pretty much a clear idea as to where we wanted it to go. Obviously, we still had to run all the data and see if we could actually perform what we set out to perform. But luckily, Dimitri is well experienced in these types of researches because he already did something quite similar to one of the fitness apps a couple of years ago.
We focused on security first. So we looked, of course, at national security, but also looked at, Tinder, it's not really a safe space, of course, but you presume if you are a woman, for instance, that if you decline an invitation or a like, you don't like somebody, that you are not being tracked anymore or you cannot be found by that person that you don't like. But the things that Martijn found and we later also found is that you can actually track people up until pretty close, actually. So we tried this on with Sebastian first. He lives in Scotland. And we kind of managed to find his house. Based on his using this app.
Scary enough. And I wasn't looking for love for either Dimitri or Martijn at that point. So I was very surprised.
That's super intriguing. So, but how did he make a story out of that? What was the idea?
Well, first you have to get the data, of course, and to see if your assumptions are correct. So we kind of set up a big experiment and created false profiles of, I think it were two women, right?
Three.
Women looking for love, of course. And what we did is we basically used what they call triangulation. So that's a very normal technological procedure. It happens when you use your cell phone, for instance. When you connect to a certain service, your cell phone is being tracked by the towers, cell phone towers. If you have three towers connecting, then you can find the middle spot between those towers. And if you do that often enough, you kind of know where you are. That's a technique the police uses to find suspects. That's also a technique that we use by placing our fake profiles, fake identities at certain places. For instance, in the case of Sebastian, we knew he was in Scotland. But to place it in certain areas in Scotland, And we asked Tinder, well, how far away is Sebastian in this case? And we got three different locations or distances, and we took the middle part. And then we just moved our profiles a little bit and we asked that question again. And we did that thousands of times because we do it automatically. And that way you kind of see and hone in on where somebody actually is at that moment.
So for your story, but whom were you hunting?
Well, in this case, Sebastian, of course, to see if the process worked, because first you want to test it out on real people. So we did it with Sebastian, and Martijn asked a girlfriend of his if we could track her. And we found not her house, but the street where she lived. And so we kind of knew this is well, precise enough to find the people that we need.
Obviously, other than just the location, Tinder shows profiles of people. So you have their images, you have their name, maybe something about their occupation, where they frequent, all those types of things. And if you pile all of that together, then it's quite easy, we found, to start pinpointing exact locations. For instance, if someone has bought a house somewhere, then you know their address. And it's very easy to check because of the triangulation aspect. You can see, is that really where they are during the nighttime or whatever.
And so this triangulation method, in theory, I mean, I don't have the technical knowledge to do it, but in theory, every citizen could do it, right?
It's not that hard. And with ChatGPT, most people can properly pull that off to do it themselves. It's really basic science that is being used in a lot of applications and things.
Just to get back to the gist of your story, can you just give us the, you know, how did you use this intriguing technique to reveal military secrets?
Well, what we did is, Dimitri has already explained about those fake profiles that we had, and obviously we made fake profiles of three women because the majority of the people in the military are still male. And we just put them in the vicinity of known army bases, essentially, both in the Netherlands as well as abroad. So we took the biggest ones and the most important ones in the Netherlands, including the ones where the F-35 fighter jets are taking off and where the American nukes are stalled on the Dutch soil. But we also put them near the Ramstein Air Base, which is the biggest airfield for the Americans outside of the US, or at least in Europe it is. And in the eastern part of Europe, so both in Romania, where there's a couple of very big NATO bases, as well as in Estonia, where the Netherlands at that point was carrying out a live mission to guard the airspace against the Russian threats. So we just put these women there and automatically again made them change positions a bunch of times. And all of a sudden we could see the profiles of the soldiers that were on Tinder on base. And they started liking us or paying interest, or even if they didn't, or even if we liked them and they didn't like us back, for instance, we could still track them essentially. So what happened because of that is that we were able to see, for instance, in Estonia, where that live mission, NATO mission was taking place, what Dutch military personnel was actually there.
So if I was a Russian intelligence operatives running these fake profiles, I'd be using that quite easily to identify soldiers and then target them for whatever nefarious purposes.
It already happens. So this is something that intelligence agencies and armies have been warning about for a couple of years, and there are a couple of cases known where this has happened, so that foreign operatives are using dating apps or other apps to get into contact with soldiers or people at certain high-risk security locations and try to, well, butter them up, basically.
So intelligence services or hostile actors can deliberately exploit this kind of data, but how does that work exactly?
Just the usual, I would say. I think maybe in the 60s, 70s or 80s, you have this image of people hanging around in smoky jazz bars in the eastern part of Berlin, trying to find someone that you can maybe connect with and share vodka or whatever, and trying to get them to talk. And this is essentially the same thing, but you can just do it from wherever you are on the planet and just start chatting away. I mean, if there is a connection and you just say, hey, what's up? Who's to say who's behind that profile, really? And as Dimitri says, it is already happening. There's militaries across the world warning for the dangers of Tinder and other dating apps, rightly because of this. But in the US, for instance, even last summer, there's a former army colonel of the former army colonel who actually pleaded guilty as to sharing very classified information with someone he met on Tinder.
Okay, they call it honey traps. It's not that sophisticated, you know. Everybody does strange things, looking for love and sex. A lot of people don't act too rationally, so they do a lot of stupid things.
And so what kind of information, like really connecting it to this national security issue, what kind of information do people actually reveal on those apps?
I don't know about you, Dimitri, but I was actually quite shocked as to that the level of information that people just share through their profiles, like pictures with big guns or saying that you are a ballistic missile operative and just in the bylines of their bio. It's just unbelievable. Like, why would, I can understand you have a sense of pride of maybe working in the military, but just keep it to a minimum, dude. Come on.
I think if you look at it from the perspective of what an intelligence agency might find interesting, the first one is identification, of course, of possible sources. That you can develop, but also the patterns that happen, because we didn't do it once, we did it over time. And if you look at people where they are over time, you start to see certain patterns. For instance, we found a couple of people working on a certain army base in the Netherlands. And a couple of weeks later, they were all gone. And they all popped up somewhere in Germany at another army base. So they probably are there on some kind of mission or maybe some exercise. But that's interesting to know. This was an artillery unit. So for a foreign intelligence agency, that might be interesting information. Or they popped up somewhere maybe near the border at Lithuania, for instance. So you see people actually moving around. We also saw a diplomat first in London, and then he popped up in Ukraine. That might be interesting information to know. So they might not reveal something specifically in their bios or during talking, but you can get quite a lot of how they behave actually in their real lives and what they are doing. You can infer that a lot from those kind of movements that they make. So that's quite worrisome.
Dimitri, you've done similar stories before. Is that like a pattern? I wonder how, you know, how is this not something that, you know, military authorities, for instance, are aware of and, you know, kind of warn their soldiers against? You know, why is there no Tinder ban on these kind of bases?
That's a very good question. I don't know. We have had a similar cases before. The most famous one is probably Strava a couple of years ago, where they looked at
the fitness app.
And people are logging their runs there. And they have this worldwide map. And basically what you can see on that map is, of course, you see the big cities like New York, etc., and where many people are running. But also in the middle of nowhere, somewhere in the desert, maybe in Syria or Iraq, where there are not supposed to be any people, you see people running there. So that's kind of revealing. I did a similar story about a year later using another running app. The Polar app. So we do basically the same thing. So continuously asking where people were in a certain area. So I was able to track people from their work, intelligence agency or a military base, to their home address. And I found people, intelligence agents. And one sunny Sunday morning, I actually went to one of those people here in the Netherlands. I knocked on their door and asked, well, this might be a little bit strange, but do you work for the military intelligence agency? And he immediately shut the door in my face, of course. And he probably called his boss. But yes, I had found one. But also another one. It was quite dangerous, actually. That was of a pilot working in Iraq at the moment, bombing ISIS. And it was really easy to find his home address and his family. So if I was an ISIS militant, it wouldn't be very hard using this kind of app to get to his family, for instance. So that it was pretty scary sometimes.
It is scary. And I mean, you're not the only journalist to have done these kind of investigations. So that kind of examples happen time and again. And, you know, sometimes, as you mentioned before, it's down to a security flaw in the app or something. But more often than not, it's just, you know, the way these digital tools work. The people being active on the internet in places that are highly sensitive or working in jobs that are highly sensitive, they will eventually reveal data about themselves on the internet. So is there really no way of stopping that at all?
Well, the problem is there are two types of data that are really harmful. And the first is the location data. Tinder, of course, needs your location data because you don't want to be matched with somebody living 1,000 miles further on. You want to be matched with somebody who's quite close. So they need your location, and there are many apps that need your location. But your location data is very, very revealing because they show those patterns over time, where you live, where you go to school, maybe if you visit an abortion clinic or a brothel or those kinds of things. If you work for the police or an intelligence agency, maybe. So you can already learn a lot from those, from this kind of data. And these apps, they collect this kind of data. Sometimes they don't really secure it good enough, like in the Polar case, and in this case also, I think, the Tinder case. Sometimes they sell this data to advertisers. And that is the second batch of data that is problematic. That is the advertising data. There's this huge network, a very fine-grained network of advertising on your phone and online. So they collect enormous amounts of information. That is not one party. There are thousands of those parties. And all those apps that are free basically get their money by selling this kind of data to others. And everybody can buy it. So we also got some of the data for free, actually. We just said we were interested in marketing things. Can we get a sample of location data from the Dutch users? And we got a sample of, I think about 1 million people in the Netherlands for over a week, all the location data. And you can find people working in police stations, working in high security prisons, working on army bases, and you can follow them the whole day around. So, and I didn't have to pay for that. I just have to make one phone call, pretending I was somebody else, and I got that kind of information. And we can get it, journalists can get it, but governments, they also just buy this kind of data.
And the thing with coming back a little bit to what alternatives would be, like the thing with Tinder in this sense is that Tinder is part of Match Group, which is the holding company, and they have different, like a variety of different dating apps. And in other dating apps, they make different choices. For instance, they don't say someone is like 1 or 2 kilometers away, but maybe someone is in this city. And that makes it a whole lot more difficult to actually try this triangulation bit and try to pinpoint people. So you can make decisions, better decisions, to keep everyone safe. Because obviously there's the security aspect that we looked into. But as Dimitri pointed out rightly at the beginning, what if you're just, especially in this day and age, a woman who's dating, and you come across someone who may be a bit technical and knows how to set up something like this? They could effectively follow you around.
Yeah, and I think the fact that you did all of this without even having to match with someone is also, that really baffles me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And even if they turn you down, for instance, like they make the active and conscious decision to say, no, I don't want to be matched with this person, it still allowed us to track you.
You know, so you were working with fake accounts, and that to me sounds quite sensitive. You know, were you having any ethical kind of second thoughts about, you know, doing that, you know, kind of cheating, fooling people like that, if you will? What's the trade-off involved?
No, of course. And we discussed this and deliberated about it before we started off on this investigation. But then we just tried to find like a fine line between not interfering too much, so also not engage with these people or try to present ourselves as the people that we were not, but only just create these profiles so that we could make use of the API of Tinder and start tracking people. Because as we said, we didn't even need a match or anything. So we weren't necessarily fooling the people that were on Tinder. Maybe we were fooling Tinder. But in order to investigate how their operation works, we thought that was justified. But obviously, we did make sure that we didn't cross any boundaries that we felt anyway.
But you ended up speaking to one person, right, on Tinder. So, yeah. You know, at what point does that, you know, get too ethically dubious to basically, you know, impersonate someone?
Well, there was a match with this person, and we opened up by saying, well, oh no, so we, to put this correctly, we did reach out to him, say we wanted to match because we liked his profile. And in all fairness, we did like his profile. That's why we wanted to chat with him.
What did you like about the profile?
So what we liked about his profile was the fact that we could deduct that he was working at the Volkel Air Base, and that he was on that base where they have the American nuclear missiles. And he was quite, well, not as open as others would be. I have to give him that. Like, he wasn't posing with any weapons or stuff, but there were photographs of him in a military uniform. So we could see, because of that, in which unit he was, what his responsibilities were, those types of things. And then we just reached out to him. And as soon as he accepted, we sent him a whole text message saying, well, we apologize. We are not who you think that we are. We are two journalists. And send him our profiles at Follow the Money and stuff. So as soon as there was any point of contact, we were completely open about what our plan was and why we were there on the platform. Very sportsmanlike, to be fair. Like, he was all right, well, fair enough. And don't worry about it.
So what kind of things did he end up telling you once you talked to him?
Well, obviously, we didn't ask him about any military secrets or anything. We don't want to put him in a position where he could be criminally charged or anything. But we did ask him about, so why do you use this? What do you use it for? Do you get more of these weird requests from other people like us? Or is there, again, are there any rules or regulations that you have to follow when it comes to the use of these types of apps and stuff? We find that a lot, and you can sort of deduct it from the profiles, that a lot of people who are in the military are very proud of what they are doing. And I can definitely understand that. And also, it's a big part of your life, isn't it? So you could even say that they're being quite transparent about it, but maybe not share everything, like the weapons that you're holding or the unit that you're part of.
The girls like it, right? That was also his...
Chicks dig it, essentially, is what he said. So,
what was the military's and Tinder's official reaction to the findings of your story?
Well, the military is a bit embarrassed because it keeps on happening again and again. But they're kind of in a bind, you know. These guys and girls are on a base for a very long time. They're often bored. So you don't want them denied to have a life, you know, an online life. And you can't just basically mandate that they cannot use their phones anymore, or their private phones anymore. It's really hard. It's a hard decision. Tinder was a whole different story. They basically denied there was a problem, and they denied that what we have found, that it was technically impossible that we found that, because they have taken some mitigating steps for to protect that privacy more, but it's not enough. We said, well, we are happy to share our findings and our data with you, and so you can look at it, but they basically didn't respond after that.
Were you already in touch with the authorities before you published the story?
Yes, of course, we always do that. Yeah, we give them time to remedy the situation if possible, if there are any... If we can do it, everybody can do it. So if there's kind of information leak, you have to give the Ministry of Defense some time to make sure that people stop doing this. So we gave them a couple of weeks.
But were the authorities aware at all before you published the story of this leak?
They should be, because there have been ample warnings about this. Even our own intelligence agencies have warned about this, about the use of these kinds of apps by soldiers. So they could have known, and they should have known.
It is quite short-sighted, if you ask me, because after the Polar article that Dmitry published earlier, there were measures that were only focused on like fitness apps, essentially, and obviously the obvious Chinese ones. But there's the problems that you have with those fitness apps are the same ones that we see here with dating apps, and perhaps even more so, because it's way more focused on contacting people and actually putting yourself out there and making yourself available and telling a little bit more about yourself. I mean, if you start flirting with someone through Strava, it will be very weird instantly. But if you start flirting through Tinder, that's a different ballgame, isn't it? So that whole honey trap situation works a lot better here, while you still have that geolocation aspect that you would have in the fitness app. So by banning those, that's just just a very small part of the problem, isn't it? It should be a much higher point on the agenda that anything that has to do with geolocation, you should be aware of if you're in these types of positions.
Well, there's also an underlying problem, I think. That's the way how we look at this kind of data leaks. We have a lot of regulation to protect against this. You know, everybody looks at it from a privacy perspective. And there's also a lot of privacy law basically protecting how this data is being used and who can access this kind of data. And many companies, but also governments, think, well, we have taken care of this. There's regulation. We have asked their permission. So we have done our job. But this isn't a privacy problem per se. It is also, but there's a larger problem. It has become a national security problem.
From your perspective, where does the responsibility lie to solve this? Is it with the apps or is it with a government?
Everybody. So the apps don't need a lot of data they actually gather. A lot of advertising data, for instance, but also what Sebastian just said. You don't need the distance to somebody on Tinder. You need their location, roughly. You know, the kind of city, which city is somebody living in, or which province, or those kinds of things. You don't need the exact distance. So the app builders have a lot to do. But the users, of course, they have to think about what they expose online. It's not very good to say that you are in charge of the ballistic missiles, for instance. Put that on Tinder. That's kind of stupid. But also the government has to be aware that there is this national security problem and not only a privacy problem. And they have to act on that. And it doesn't make you popular, but especially nowadays, it's becoming more and more important.
Because of the intensifying geopolitical tensions, you mean?
Of course, yeah.
And it is a fine balance because I've written about especially what happens in the advertising industry space online too. And there you see that our intelligence services actually use those data as well. So they are sort of balancing as to how to protect ourselves from foreign actors having access to these data, while on the other hand, being very quite happy about the fact that they can use it as well. And this makes the whole political discussion about should we be against it? Do we want it? Very murky at best.
Because what you mean is the method that you used in this story, maybe our intelligence services actually also use it to find out data about, say, I don't know, Russian soldiers.
I would say that's a safe bet, yeah.
Yeah. Plus, now that the US and Europe are not friends anymore, and let's say it's a hypothetical, we get into a conflict around Greenland. Almost all of this data, our data, is stored on American servers, which are easily available for all the American services. So basically, America knows where all our soldiers are, what they are doing, who are they connecting with. There's a lot of interesting information for their intelligence agencies. And as long as there's peace and we're happy friends and we all get along, that's fine. But when the shit starts to hit the fan, then we have a big problem.
It's been a year since you published your story. Has anything really changed since?
Not that I'm aware.
No, I don't think so. Well, there's more awareness of the dependency on this kind of technology, American technology, and maybe more awareness about the dangers of relying too much on this technology for national security purposes. But Tinder wasn't about to change anything, so I don't think they have changed anything. And I don't think people stopped using Tinder suddenly. So no, I think it's the problem is still there and probably will be for a long time.
And in doing this whole investigation, what's the aspect that really shocked you the most?
The terrible pictures men post on of themselves. Bare chests with fish, caught fish, with friends drinking beers. I think, oh, I felt sorry for the women on there.
Well, you're not the Thank target you. Group, Dimitri.
I know. I don't see those kinds of things. So I'm a happily married man.
On that note, we'll wrap up today's episode. Thank you so much for joining us, Sebastian and Dimitri. And Alex and I will be back soon for another episode.
Thanks, guys.
You've listened to the podcast of Follow the Money. Our watchdog journalism is funded by our members. Subscribe and support European investigative journalism.